Tonight we opened up the door, and it was just hippie season. I knew this was going to happen eventually because the Dead & Company had been in town. They were in New York for two nights. So we opened up the door, and then boom, there they were, the Deadheads.
Hey, everybody.
Zabin' Stick.
It is that time again. We're having yet another episode of Rock Under Fire. Yeah, we're having another episode. If you don't like the Grateful Dead, listen, it's going to be a real good talk. We have several experts in the subject on hand. Except, you know, these fucking hippies, two of them are on the way. You don't know where they are yet. Can't depend on these guys. One of them is here, actually.
Hello,
we have a dead Mark, in the house.
Man.
We have Mark with us.
What's happening, Mark?
Our old buddy, Mark, way back in the day, he's legit. He's going to school us on a Grateful Dead. Yeah, me, Pat, and Mike aren't going to do much.
Right now from, I don't know, where are they tonight? Are they in Boston or North Carolina?
They were just in Boston
like
last night.
Yeah, they were
in
Boston last night. Okay. I don't really follow the Dead & Company much. I'm more of old school. Am I not?
I don't know. You say you're an old school guy, but you kept in touch with the Dead quite a bit after Jerry died. I recall going to several post-Jerry shows with you, in fact, didn't I? Or am I crazy?
Absolutely, because there's no fill-in for the live music that is the Grateful Dead's repertoire, man. There's no substitute for that. So even if it's just half the band and other musicians, it's still going to be a good time.
The addiction is that bad. Even if the hit's not as intense, you still need the hit.
I don't know if it's an addiction, man. I call it more of a community, more of a...
I agree. And I my first experience with the Dead & Company was this summer, and it's a community.
Your first one?
Yeah, that was my first
experience. Your first Dead show?
Yeah. I'm admittedly not a Dead fan.
Yeah.
Obviously, I respect the hell out of them. They're all tremendous musicians. But it's a community. It's a traveling show. Within a show, it really was, and that's what blew me away. There's a camaraderie there.
I can go to a show in any state in this union, and I will run into somebody I know from somewhere along the line of the last 30 years of my Grateful Dead concert-going experiences.
And that's crazy, man. That says a lot. Before we take off on the Dead stuff, we got to mention Malcolm Young, and I'll mention this because, admittedly, again, I'm not an AC/DC guy. But the guy was a powerhouse, man. I mean, the rhythm behind AC/DC was Malcolm Young. And right. he just died this week. And it just seems, again, we're rolling up on an episode we're recording and another big musician has died. Much props to Malcolm Young, and thoughts go out to the AC/DC camp. You know, while I'm at it, Dee Snider, he's liked a couple of our things on Twitter and stuff like that. His mom was hit by a car. And she was in critical condition for a while. She's, if any of the Dee Snider camp, if any of the fans are out there listening, shout out to Dee and his mom. She seems to be, long road ahead of her, but getting well. So
get better, Mrs. Snider. Did you say Dee liked a couple of our things? Did you
see
you right?
Yeah,
he did. He did. Yeah. He liked.
I wonder if he. Heard
I mentioned his name. We mentioned his name last week.
Did we tag him?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, Dee and I keep missing each other, man. We just, he still needs to return my email.
I know, he's on my inbox all the time.
He's recording right now, too, so, he's quite busy. But I just wanted to throw that out there before we get rolling.
Fuck yeah.
It's going to be a conversation and a half, I'm sure. But
right, and every episode, and Stick and I were just talking the other day, how when we recorded with Richie Rano, how every episode begins with the death of somebody that week, or 2 weeks prior, and because this is a bi-weekly thing, the death usually happens right after our episode. So yeah. I said jokingly, I said, why don't they ever die the day before an episode? And so Malcolm Young happens the day before.
Yeah, thanks, Malcolm.
You helped us out.
You were just saying you wanted to change the name of the show to Who Died. Mike, I think you have a good idea there, a podcast about the dead rock star of the week.
Well, this is something nobody is addressing it yet in terms of a podcast or in the media where with some regularity that this is going to be a regular thing. Everybody took 2016 to be this fluke, and I kept saying 2017 is going to be the same thing. 2018 is going to be more and more and more as we continue to lose our aging rock stars.
Bad.
Man.
For you two, I know it would be.
We could easily.
Dylan or Keith for you two.
As long as Mick and Keith and Dylan are still walking around and Bruce.
We could very easily put together a second podcast called The Weekend Death.
Yep.
And we would do very well.
No week.
Nobody is doing it yet.
Don't take a vacation in this town.
Grim
Reaper, never take a day off.
On that note, David Cassidy, as we speak, is not doing well. Some people already have him down as dead. The guy is still with us from most accounts, from most, reputable sources.
Does not look good, though.
Yeah, so we'll acknowledge that. Hopefully he'll pull through by some miracle, but we're addressing David Cassidy at this point right now. We have the Deadheads in the house, and
we
people are going to be passing through throughout the show.
Yeah, passing through. We got one guy here, though, and he knows his shit, and that's Mark. I was thinking about you last night, Mark.
Thank you.
Do you still like Eminem? What was that thing you did a couple years ago?
He played me an Eminem song before.
I do like Eminem.
That wasn't Eminem earlier.
It was on Saturday Night Live last night. I love
Eminem.
Yeah,
we were just trying to be
cool. I do love Eminem, man. It was not just a thing to try to be cool.
That's why I brought it up, because I saw Saturday Night Live, too, last night. Yeah, you're still into that? You're still on that?
I do like Eminem, yes, I must say. It is a secret pleasure of mine.
I was hating on him last night. I was.
Okay.
I don't know. I haven't listened to Eminem in 10 fucking years. He's on Saturday Night Live last night. What's he talking about? The same goddamn thing. His life, what the media's saying about him, his mom and his kids, and my wife don't like me. Like, talk about anything else.
I didn't see the episode yet.
Does he have any songs that don't have the I perspective? No. Tell a story.
Campaign speech, which I thought was really good that he put it out after the election last year.
Yeah.
And it just kind of came and went. And at the time, and again, you know me, I don't like rap. I love Eminem's voice. I could listen to Eminem. He's fucking brilliant. And when he released that song, which, again, disappeared right after, as quick as it was released, I was raving about it on this show. Like, it was probably like episode 10 or 11 or something like that.
Look, there hasn't been a lyrical rapper like him in the last 10 or 15 years. The guy is just that fucking good. I would throw... I don't know, Q-Tip from Tribe Called Quest, maybe. I mean, that guy is insane.
Tribe is like the...
Lyrically, the guy is just... I mean, you really, when you dig into the lyrics that this guy is saying and the way he's putting it together, you're fucking just mind blown, man.
Well, I mean, for me, it goes like this, right? I'm a wholly evolved person at this stage in my life, right? Like, and I like to nurture all sides of my personality and all sides of who I am. And, Eminem fits that bill sometimes. You know, I got an angry, frustrated side, you know, and when I get angry and frustrated, man, Eminem helps me through that anger and frustration, man. Like, the Grateful Dead was my first love musically and will always be my love, but when I'm angry, they don't help me.
That's not an angry man's band.
You know what I mean? Like,
when you were an angry teenager, man, were you, like, not turning to Metallica for that
Yeah, what was that you said about your first love? I think your first love was a little different. We know who you are.
I mean, did you look? I mean, we all went to metal beers.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, listen, if you were going back that far,
we went to. I mean, you and me went to.
Rhinestone Cowboy.
Yeah, don't tell us.
You and me went to fucking.
Going down that road.
Me too. I love it.
I mean, look, you and me got a limo and went to a Metallica show once.
Yes, we did. Yes, we did.
We went to Kiss conventions together. So don't tell us.
Yeah.
What
dreaded four letter word?
Okay, so being a metalhead, what drove you to the Grateful Dead?
It was a natural progression, right? I went from, like, Metallica to R.E.M. and Bob Dylan to the Dead.
Okay.
Yeah, Pat, man, if I might jump in, I've spoken about this in the past in a show, like, in the late 80s, like, something happened in this country. A big part of it was the Grateful Dead blowing up with Touch of Grey, like, a whole hippie thing happened, and we really did. get swept up in it. Mark was right there with us, man. He mentioned some of the same artists, man, that we grew up with.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know?
It sounded like I was talking to one of you two guys. Yeah.
We love a lot of the same
shit. I mean, we grew up a whole four houses apart from one another.
Right.
So.
And that's testament to the story that you told me before about Bobby waking up one day and there were 80,000 people out there.
Yeah.
And it's like, you could probably elaborate on that a little bit better than I can.
There was an interview that Bob did, and I don't want to specify the interview because I don't want to get it wrong. But there was an interview he did where he said, like, you know, he woke up one day in the mid to late 80s, and all of a sudden there's 80,000 people at our concert. You know what I mean? And he didn't really even know how to do it. And the particular burden fell upon Jerry at that time. You know what I mean? Because Jerry felt like, you know, all these people are depending on me for something, you know, and he took that burden upon himself, you know, and it really, like, played into his drug addiction
drug
and all
use
that
and
other stuff, you know?
Yeah.
So.
And that was basically the Touch of Grey thing when they just kind of exploded at that point. You know, it's funny because, you know, they were doing videos. They got caught up in the whole video thing because it was like corporate. The Deadheads kind of grew up more or less and it became corporate rock almost. You know what I mean? I know a lot of successful people who are Deadheads and, you know, suit and tie kind of guys that just grew up and evolved at that point. It was just very strange. It was a really, really weird time.
There's nothing that can be defined with the Dead. It's just, there's no, you can't hang a fucking label on it. There's no linear progression of anything, man.
And again, just going back, I hate to beat the drum, but being my first experience, I even said it on that episode, you know, the week after, I think we recorded, the amount of people from all different spectrums of life at this show, from a small infant baby to the oldest hippie that you could possibly find sitting on a lawn chair out in the back by the wall. It was just fucking mind-blowing. It was really an incredible
experience. Thank God for it. Thank God for it. I mean, there's going to be no replacement for it when it goes. They got to keep on going, man. You know, they have to keep the counterculture and the hippie something. There's some hippie energy going out
because it's bad. I'll throw this question out there.
We need it more than ever.
Is John Mayer making them young again and making them want to play and go out and tour these songs?
I don't really feel that was probably ever an issue, especially with Bobby.
Yeah.
Because he's never stopped.
Right. No,
ever since Jerry died, he's never stopped.
Right.
You know, he's always on to the next project. So I think that's internally within him to go on and play this music regardless of whatever circumstances are, regardless of whatever circumstances are around him, you know. That being said, I think John Mayer is also bringing a little a younger generation to the table again.
Okay, fair.
Because he's got a lot of his own fans that probably were not exposed to Grateful Dead music.
That's got to be a big part of the appeal.
I had an interesting conversation in Camden, actually, with a guy at the concession stand about John Mayer. And he, you know, I said, well, check out the John Mayer Trio. Because that's not bubblegum rock John Mayer where he was sucking everybody off to try and get famous. But the John Mayer Trio really showed his chops to where he got the attention of guys like Clapton. He got the, you know, I mean, he showed his chops as a guitar player and maybe he even got the attention of Bob Weir at that point as well. But, you know, and the guy was like, wow, John Mayer Trio, that's pretty cool. And I'll check that out.
Yeah, it's been mutual because his association with the Grateful Dead has really increased his street cred, God knows.
Oh, yeah.
He was like a punchline before that in some circles, man. So. Yeah.
But I also feel that John has a genuine affinity for the music.
He definitely does.
You know
agree.
What I mean, like, I really feel like the music took hold of him in his own life at some point, and he was like, wow, this is something I have to do.
And admittedly, he was never even into them until about 5 years ago.
Correct.
Wow.
And he just totally, it just hit him. It took over his life and everything, you know, and I'm getting a message from Keith right now. Keith is not going to make it. He's still in PA.
All right. So we just had another Deadhead walk in the room. Hey, Tom.
So that leaves it up to
Keith's
Tom.
Keith's place, man. Come on.
You're gonna we have a Deadhead on reserve here, so.
We have a Deadhead. Yeah, he just walked in.
We went outside and picked a fresh
one. Smoking a bong. Yeah, we picked him off a tree. I hope we can only get him to, I'll get out of my seat, bro.
Here's another one.
Say a few things. Yeah, here he is. Give him some encouragement.
Yeah,
he's been in the background before.
Let's get.
I'm watching the Dead show right now.
Oh, he's watching the Dead. Fuck
where are they tonight? We were actually asking that. Where
Boston?
Boston again? Okay, yeah. The two nights in Boston.
Rob down in Florida, who's going to be joining us in a little bit, is actually on a nightly basis. He's been posting the live streams.
Well, Nugs, you can get it on that Nugs.net site. That you can get get the whole show, but he's posting that first show because you get that one for free, or the first song you can get for free.
All right, we're joined by Mahalchik. Wait, hey, get back
here! He's leaving already.
What?
Say hi,
dude.
Man.
Are you serious? Mark's going to say some controversial shit.
Probably, I'm going to be.
He's
going to
say
refuted.
Some. He's going to need to be corrected on.
Because as is, you know, the case with most deadheads I know, our memory is absolutely 100 the best.
Yeah,
and you know, and
some corroboration.
So there it is.
Because we're not qualified, man. If you're going to let us talk about the dead when it's your expertise, dude, then don't be responsible.
This guy's been to more dead shows than I have, so I think you should have a seat, but, you know.
You got a seat at the dead table, man.
It's the magic of editing, dude. If it doesn't work, we don't use it, dude. If it's lame, we don't use it.
You're the deadhead on reserve, man.
We shuffled the whole studio around. Tom can go back to his seat.
If you want to chime in, let us know.
But
where were we?
At the essence of Grateful Dead music is the spontaneity, right? And the non set direction.
If you have to narrow it down to one word, spontaneity is it.
Correct. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely, right? So, like, why shouldn't this show just be the same exact?
It's about the moment, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right?
And that's it really is what this show has become. Like, whatever it is, it is. That's what the show, you know, we usually sometimes will come in with a plan, and the plan, more times than not, doesn't happen.
One of us drops our drawers and shits on the plan.
Yeah, usually starts with one of us getting arrested, you know, or something like that. And it starts with the hosts of the show, man. We don't usually have, like I said, the cast of the show is whoever's here now. And
I listen.
You're one of our listeners.
I am.
One of our 36 people.
That's right. 36. As my 13-year-old stepdaughter pointed out
this
to me.
This is funny, man.
On my way here, when I told her I was going to do a podcast tonight, she looked it up on YouTube and saw that it had 36 subscribers. And she's like, no one's going to hear that. Why are you even bothering? And she kind of made fun of me.
You should have pointed her in the direction of iTunes. We have many more followers.
I'd say
iTunes.
Like 95% of our audience is on iTunes. The people that listen to YouTube is our friends on Facebook when we post it. You know?
And a lot of people with Droid phones.
And 35 of those 36.
That's me, man. I listen to it on
36
YouTube.
People have Droid phones. There we go. Yeah. I'm an iTunes guy.
But you know, D. Snyder knows about us, so.
Well, then you know you've made it.
Well, now we can get Bob Weir to know about us.
Yes.
Yeah, now we can. We're reaching a whole new segment, man.
So, okay, take us back now. What year was it? 80, 90, something, 91, 92? When you said, okay, Metallica's kind of peaked, which I feel that they did in that era. I think Justice for All was their peak record, my opinion.
In my opinion, it's the beginning of the end, that record.
Really?
Me too.
I think they peaked on that album.
I think they peaked on Masters.
Master? Me too. Okay. Yeah. I actually like... Master, I love it for all the reasons with Cliff, but and Justice for All to me was just a hardcore punch to the face for them. It was really good. But anyway.
Yeah, and then they put out a video for one.
Yeah.
Like, right now the Deadheads are vomiting in their bongs.
Yes.
Okay, beginning of the end. Okay. So we're looking at around that era, late 80s, early 90s, and you said, who turned you on to the Dead? What turned you on to that and say, okay, let's check out REM. Let's check out... This other music that's out there that's not Metallica, because Metallica is...
I'll answer that if you don't want to.
Go ahead.
Drugs were a big part of it.
Fair answer.
I think, like Mark said, it's a natural progression from like coming off of what you were listening to, Bob Dylan. Bob Dylan had an association with the Dead very close to when you got into him, because he had just toured with the Dead 3 or 4 years before. You know, Dylan and the Dead, 87.
Yeah.
Right.
And I had moved to a different town. Out of Forge when I was 16, and the friends that I made there were Deadheads, and they also started me on that path, you know. And the first show I went to was in 1990, but I didn't go to another one until 1991.
You know, it's interesting. I got like all that out of the way early. Like, I never went to the Dead. I was into the Hallucinogens, but I went more like the Pink Floyd route.
Yeah, we went that route too.
17 years old, and I kind of just stayed in that, you know, stayed in that realm and hovered there. And my father, you know, I've said this before, my father's influence to me was Allman Brothers, and I kind of went that direction rather than the Grateful Dead direction.
The cousins.
Yeah, they are. They really are. And, you know, it's when Jerry died, everybody kind of, not everybody, but a lot of people said, okay, well, the Dead is done touring. The Allman Brothers still tour, and that's a festival. That was a festival in itself as well. And, you know, it was an interesting time.
Well, Fish too is also carrying the fucking baton.
Yeah,
Fish kind of filled that void for a long time.
Well, yeah, I'm talking pre-Fish, though. You're looking at the Allman Brothers Band, which was the touring band.
Well, I mean, Fish was around in 95.
Early 90s. They were. Yeah. You were. I mean, yeah. I remember you going to Fish shows, but before Jerry died, and then like you know the line of Jerry, you know, post and pre and post Jerry, Fish was huge before mm-hmm. Jerry died. I remember, you know, I was never a fan, but they were huge, but they kind of filled that. Is it accurate to say that they did fill that a little bit of that void? For a lot of Dead fans, a lot of Dead fans don't like Fish.
A lot of Dead fans were definitely against Fish for whatever reason, but I always found the same kind of camaraderie at Fish shows that I found at Dead shows. Not to the same extent,
right?
But somewhat, and the spontaneity of the music was there, which is why I went mostly to Dead shows to begin with. You know, I feel like a lot of people, especially in that time of the Dead, did not go to Dead shows for the music, right? And there was like, that's where there's a lot of people in parking lots just looking to have
Shady Element,
yeah. Do drugs.
Yeah.
And,
sell
and
drugs, do drugs, yep. Whatever. Like, yeah.
There for the party.
My goal was always to be inside the show.
Sure.
I wasn't always inside the show because couldn't get a ticket.
Yeah.
But that was the goal.
Yeah.
You know? So.
Like I said, it was a whole touring, it was like a circus.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, what do they call it? Shakedown Street, I guess they call it, right?
Yeah.
It was a whole, like, fucking thing.
I know Tom will vouch for this, too. Like, I remember the city of Albany closing down streets around the venue just so that there could be a Shakedown Street for Deadheads. That's how welcoming the city of Albany, New York was.
Woo, good job, Albany.
Albany.
Good job.
Camden didn't have to worry about that, Camden. Camden. Shakedown Street in Camden was fucking rolled right out into the area that you didn't want to be in.
Yeah. Jesus, man.
It went from Shakedown Street to Holy Shit, Where Am I Street in a hurry. Yeah, like Elvis once said, in the ghetto.
But after Touch of Grey, 89, you do attract like a Jockey Element is starting to show up at around that time when they really hit the big, big time right around then. Right, fellas? Mm-hmm. I mean, things wasn't all about the family anymore.
Well, it's hard for me to really say that because I came on about that same time. But I believe that my principles were more set in the way it should have been.
Proved yourself tried and true. Element.
Yeah, that happened to all of us, though. Right. Being you know the age we are and the music we grew up on, and we sought it out for different. We were seeking it out for different reasons than most kids do. You know, you're 100% correct on that. I agree with you on that. There was a true intention there,
right.
to find something new and you know. Exciting. We just missed it by a generation. You know what I mean? It's really that was our downfall.
What happened to you, when you start going from like listening to Kiss and Judas Priest to like Dylan and the Beatles? That's a sea change in your personality. Oh, it's God, huge, yeah. And it was dramatic for a lot of
your clothes change. Your clothes literally change.
Man, yeah, that goes deep.
When you go to listening to music that I don't want to say wasn't thought provoking, but because the music was still
party all night, man. That's all it was about. Yeah.
Right, but like when you go to music that like you know when you're hearing Masters of War by Bob Dylan, right? And you're like, wow, man. You know,
the bar has been raised.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
I don't want to rock and roll all night and party every day anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. It starts to open. Yeah. You start to get a different set of...
Growing
you know,
up, I guess, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's all part of it, too. And that's the age, right?
Yeah, oh, sure.
Between, like, 15 and 25 is when we're doing our most growing, probably, you know? Yeah.
I'll tell you this, man. I like the Grateful Dead more right now, today, than I ever did my entire life, man. It's been like a 30-year slow burn, man. Getting more and more into this band, and it's not getting old. Like Bob, they're complicated, always picking up on new things. But, and you know, one of us is going to say it sooner or later, I like the studio records. I will not, I don't care about the 78 Largo tape. Give me the vinyl, Blues for Allah,
this
American
is, this
Beauty.
This is one thing I do want to talk
songs,
about,
man.
A lot of Deadheads, man, I'm not going to call it percentage, man, because I don't know what a percentage is. But a lot of Deadheads I talk to over the years don't like the studio albums. We get it. It's all about the live show. It's all about the spontaneity of the moment. Studio songs are kind of like blueprints for what the songs become live. I get that too. Where do you stand on the studio albums?
Me personally, I will listen to the studio albums, but it is not my preferred listening by any stretch of the imagination.
I guess I'm a fucking Deadhead because I have to agree with him. I agree with him. I'm not... Since seeing them, I'm like listening to more live stuff by them, and I'm like, whoa, that just fucking blows me away. They're doing these all these little things. Like you said, the blueprint is there.
Right.
And then now take that blueprint and run with it, boys. And I really respect that, admire it. It sounds fucking great. They're all phenomenal musicians, man. Right now, okay, it's not the Grateful Dead right now, but that group of guys that they got with them is just, they're fucking firing on all cylinders, man. They really are. I don't, you know, and I got two deadheads sitting right next to me. You might disagree with that, but I just think that band is firing on all cylinders right now.
Where do you feel about the studio albums, man?
Good. It's just I think the live experience, and it's like apples and oranges. You know?
Right.
Some are good. Workman's Dead, American Beauty.
Workman's Dead's great.
I love Blues for Allah. You know, and it's just a whole different realm. The live experience, like it's just
right.
I don't know.
I can see that the deadhead that did not go to tons of live shows. Liking the studio albums, like Stick over here, right?
Yeah.
But when you've immersed yourself in so many live shows,
it becomes like wallpaper.
It loses its luster.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because you know, like, what the songs can become and the spontaneity of it. And let's face it, I've got to state this right now. The Grateful Dead was the best cover band that ever lived. Okay? You never knew when they were going to play a song from any other artist that they had liked or admired at some point, and then just play it one night. You know, for a while in the 90s, they played a Bob Dylan song every single night.
Yeah.
Every single night, just about, in the first set, there was a Bob Dylan song.
The Dead were the best Bob Dylan cover band ever.
That's what they say, man. That has been said. Yeah. That's one thing I like about
it. I think they've played Masterpiece more than Bob has.
Yeah.
Over the years, absolutely. Man.
I think that's that.
Well, and I like their version better, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Yeah, musically, I used to sit there, like, figure out, like, what the fuck are they doing? Like, what's that? Like, for years, I listened to it, like, just trying to figure out their musicality, man. It's so complex.
Well, from our perspective, is that the reason I'm always interested in what the Deadheads think about the studio albums is because I think where we are on the Dead, we were never Deadheads.
Nope.
Stick and I, we were never Deadheads. And I'm excluding you because we know you were never really a fan. So going back, with our experience with the Dead is that we both love the Dead, but we were never Deadheads. And the way I think we've looked at the Dead, or at least myself, is that I view the Grateful Dead within the context of the entire body of classic rock, what became classic rock. So there's the Beatles, the Stones, Zeppelin, Pink Floyd, the Grateful Dead. So I see them as, when I say just another group, I don't mean that disparagingly, that they're in that canon of, I say the word canon because that's the body of work. The pantheon is of the gods, and the canon is the work they create. So the Dead, you know, growing up with 102.7 and WPLJ before that, and later on 104.3, they were always in that, they were always a staple of classic rock. So do I like it any more or less than Zeppelin or Pink Floyd or anything like that? No, but it's as good. You know what I mean? They're respected, they're revered, and that's the way I've viewed the Dead. But at the same time, I've always been privy to the information of Deadheads because we've always been surrounded by them. So we've always been able to talk with the best of them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so Mark, I remember one night you called me from either Albany or Atlanta at like 2 a.m. Mike, I got the... And you read me the set list of... You were somewhere, man.
Set list of songs you don't know.
So,
it's Slipknot.
You know, and I got Fire, all of my tapes from this guy right here. This guy was always giving me, like, listen to this. This is Fillmore 70, you know, Fillmore East, and just, you know, which had... One of those tapes had the best version of Easy Wind I've ever heard.
Every show had one of the best versions. Every show you guys saw was the best show.
Now, is that network still alive and kicking? The recording network?
It's all on archive.org these days.
Yeah.
It's all computerized. It's all put right there. It's ever at everyone's fingertips, you know, and it's still free.
Wow. That's pretty impressive.
You know what I mean? Like, the Dead were always about
allowing
people to tape their shows, allowing they had things called taper tickets. They wanted their music out.
They wanted
out
them
there.
Down in the front to tape those,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. They wanted their music out. Like, they were never like, we're making money. They made money by touring.
Yeah, right? Well, that's
and in
most
the 80s,
do.
They were the third highest grossing act
in
the 80s behind Madonna and Michael Jackson. A lot of people don't realize that.
Which is why when Stick said before around 89 when they hit it big, it's that not meaning that they weren't already big for a decade before, but it was just they took them to another level where
big,
said like they went from playing places like Winterland and, you know, in the stadiums on a regular basis, right?
Yep. I had a brain.
Editing, man. Editing.
You know what I mean? But Mike was saying something. Oh, this is what I wanted to say. You know, I see how you're viewing, you know, their catalog along the lines of all these other.
Their catalog
bands,
is,
right?
is to and be revered along
they're on
with
that
the
Mount
rest
Olympus
of the body of work.
With the rest of the gods, they are.
Knowing you as big as a big Bruce fan that you are, right?
Right.
He's about the only one comparable live out of that, out of all these bands you speak of. A lot of them had set shows. A lot of them did like this.
Right.
Bruce is the only one besides the Dead who went out there and winged it for 3.5 hours a night
right.
and just put their best whatever. Well, the Dead didn't always put their best. Let's get real about that. There were some very drug-induced nights.
Let's try this
where,
tonight.
Where the performance wasn't, you know.
Greg Allman did the same shit. He was all drunk
there,
up.
You know? But like, you know, Bruce is the only one comparable in that aspect.
Yeah,
in the live show aspect of like, let's go and let's do this thing. You know what I mean? A lot of the other bands that we love, that I love, a lot of rehearsed stuff, man. And you know, that's great.
That's true.
I could see it for 2 hours, but I can only go see it once for 2 hours.
If you see Pink Floyd, you're gonna get the same show.
The same show.
It's very orchestrated.
Not only are you gonna get the same show, you're gonna get the same speech in between the songs. They're saying the same thing.
I gotta throw the Allman Brothers into that mix too.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, I would. That should be fair. Yeah, I would definitely say the Allman Brothers.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they were doing blues songs.
And later on, Fish, if I'm not mistaken, right? Yeah.
Fish do it. Santana out there.
Square Garden without repeating a song.
But historically, I mean, Fish. We're talking 70s, 60s, 70s, 80s, you know, before Fish.
Right.
Yeah, man. But as far as like the, you know, maybe just like to close out on the studio albums, put that to rest. Deadheads need to realize that those albums are important. And I'm sure they do know that. American Beauty in itself, once you, if you just eliminate the whole idea of the tapes and the live shows, man, as a classic rock and roll album, it's up there with all of the important shit. And, you know, There are very good reasons for that. You know, Mars Hotel, Wake of the Flood. These are great fucking albums, man. With that, the fact that these songs, man, you know, when you're hearing Stella Blue and Ro Jimmy, Eyes of the World, and they're very special moments in a Dead show, man, they were born somewhere, you know, and they're housed in this fucking thing called Wake of the Flood, you know, and that's an awesome thing.
Well, also, a lot of them were born on that stage,
and they were born
and
on the stage. That's very true, man.
So, like, they got the song, and before it was ever put on a studio
this is
album,
true, man.
They were playing it live.
Absolutely.
So it was more born on a stage, some of
good
them.
Point.
Not all of them, but some of them. You know,
some of these songs that you guys were probably hearing before they were put on it. Well, I guess what was the last one? 90 Built to Last.
Yeah, no, those were already.
So a lot of those songs were being played years before they were actually recorded.
Like Touch of Grey was first played in 82. It was the hit, you know, popular in
87. Wow, okay, so it was that early.
Oh yeah.
Oh,
Touch of Grey was 82 they were playing.
Yeah.
Yeah, they started playing in 82. Yep.
No shit.
Didn't come out on an album until 89. That's what I mean. Like, they were born.
How much of that song changed?
In the Dark was 87. Yeah.
How much of that song in particular changed before, you know, when it hit album?
Decent portion of it.
Yeah.
I mean, they definitely condensed it and sweetened it up for it because it really became their only hit ever.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But the early live versions are still a good 6, 7, 8 minutes long.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
Two good words to use for why I like the studio albums. They're condensed and sweet, which I think does that band
part,
well.
You're
man.
Getting the
yeah.
best part of the.
Yeah. That's my.
I want to check. What was that website?
Two cents is all.
Archive.org.
Archive.org. I want to check that out. I want to listen to something like that from 82 or something like that.
Yeah.
To check something like that out.
82 is one of my preferred years, by the way.
Mine too. For
you gave,
many
I don't know if it was, I think it was you that gave me a long time ago, I think it was a New Year's Eve show in 82 with Etta James. Where she guested on something. Was that you or one of you guys gave me a tape?
I gave you the Etta James tape. I think Rick Francis gave me that.
All right, but we listened to it. I remember getting it, and we listened to it in your room. We actually were in your bedroom listening to it.
Yeah.
But well, I mean,
when I think of 82 related to the Dead, I think of that. It was either 81 or 82.
Well, for me also, the Brent era was my favorite era of Grateful Dead music. You know, a lot of us Deadheads, we can break it down eras as, like, you know, there's the Pigpen era,
right?
There's the Keith and Donna era, there's the Brent era, and then there's the Bruce and Vince era.
You think that Mahalchik Brent era number one?
I don't know. It's a tie. You know,
between what?
The 70s. You know,
Pigpen era,
no,
right?
Well, a lot of people, you know, a lot of the older heads said, you know, the Dead died with Pigpen, but the '70s were great, you know, and that was Keith, you know. So, but Brent too, it's more, you know, more modern, if you would. It's 50-50, you know. One week it's '70s, one week it's Brent, you know.
Yeah. No, I like your attitude. I like your attitude about it.
I didn't have to listen to Donna sometimes. But.
Same thing with years. You know, like 85 is a great year, 82, 89, yep. You know, and then you get lost in 77, 72. It's, you know, you go through phases, you know.
Yeah, yeah. So how you feeling?
If you ask Bob Weir, he says the greatest year that the band was most musically tight and performing the best, his favorite year was 1989, which I found a little odd just to pick that year.
I agree with that.
You agree with that?
What does Bob Weir?
You're talking about Bruce Hornsby.
Bob Weir said that was the Grateful Dead's best year.
Was Hornsby with them in '89?
Musically, live.
Musically, it was 89? Like 89 and into early '90. The first half of '90. That's like
Hornsby was guessing with them a lot.
That's like a high watermark for Grateful Dead. Definitely
after Brent died. Brent was still around in '90.
So Bruce wasn't with them yet.
No.
Okay.
But Bob felt that the band's health was the best during that time. They did a lot of more practicing than they had ever done in the past.
Was Jerry clean at that moment?
Jerry was clean at that moment, but also, I mean, like Jerry was kind of, you know, he had the coma in 86, right? So it took him a couple years to get back to where he was. In 89, he kind of got back. You know what I mean?
Right. I remember reading that in his biography.
To check that out, too.
But the Grateful Dead is so much more than just music, though, man. You know, I mean, they're the only band where people radically transform their lives around seeing them and following them. I mean, is there another one where people, where you didn't see, we didn't see these guys for a while. These guys went on tour. You guys were gone 6 months out of the year, you know. You adapted your life to going on tour with the Grateful Dead. It became like that. Which is nuts.
I can't think of anyone. Been nobody like it, and there will never
be
anybody.
That's
got
to intrigue you. When people start changing their lives for it, you got to say, what am I missing here, man? Let me listen to this again.
And they're still doing it for Dead and Company.
Yeah.
Sean. I'm not going to mention his last name, but we all know Sean. Sean went to like every show of that fucking of the summer tour. Almost. I don't know if he did every one, but he was goddamn close. I mean, he had the Denver, you know, the shirts were great. Said Camden Dead, like Boulder Dead or whatever it was, Colorado Dead, whatever they were. So, you know, people seeing the people around the show with those different shirts on was pretty neat.
Well, for me personally, I have four kids these days, and tickets are $150 a pop to go see that band. And to me, I cannot spend $150 to go see that band.
That's understandable. It's understandable. If they can, they can.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of the people, you still see the traveling, the sideshow of it, though, because they're selling things in the parking lot that are handcrafted or whatever they're doing to get money to even if they go into the show, or they just hang out and they do their thing and it's their lifestyle. That's what they do. From the guy selling fucking dollar whippet hits to the lady who's embroidering all kinds of really cool leather jewelry. I mean, they're, you know, they all have a place in that environment. It's really neat.
And you got to rough it a little bit, you know. If you're really into creature comforts, you're not going to go see the Grateful Dead. You know, we're all getting a little older. We like a nice soft pillow at the end of the night.
Nice little Hilton, the Hilton or something. You're not staying in a Hilton every night.
Scrub beneath our balls.
I'm sure you guys have slept in many a cars.
Yeah, I'm absolutely not into that lifestyle.
I don't think I would recover from a night in a car these days.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think my back or my knees or, you know, like.
Pre-show, we were talking about being that mid-age, you know, getting middle-aged and getting old and, like, achy and tired and, cranky.
Yep.
If I can't reach over to the car door and grab a goddamn cup of coffee when I wake up in the morning, that's not gonna happen, man. You're not gonna want to be fucking waking up in no car with me in the morning. That ain't fucking gonna work.
Yeah.
There's gonna be some mother effers dropped around in that bitch.
Yep. Time to hang it up.
All right, so we are joined by Rob down in Florida. Rob, what's going on, brother?
Gentlemen, how are we tonight? Everybody all right? Everybody all right? Patch, Dick, Mike, everybody?
What's going on, man?
Doing very well, Rob. Thanks for coming on.
Excellent. Oh, I appreciate to be here, man. I'm honored, man. I listen to the show all the time, man. It's great. I love what you guys are doing, man. Keep it up. Keep up the good work, man. Rock and roll, you know?
Awesome.
So we're obviously talking about Pink Floyd tonight, man. So, you know. So give us a brief history with the Dead, with your relationship with the Dead, man. How far back does it go with you?
Oh God, God. Well, my cousins that, you know, 70s, you know. I grew up with my cousins next door. I had older cousins in Forts that I grew up the Walsh family. And when I moved from New York here, you know, they were older, 5, 6, and 7 years older than me, you know, maybe even a little older than that, a couple of them, you know. There was three of them. And they were, you know, 60, 70 kids, you know. So you figure I'm going to be 50, so... I was born in 68, you know, so whatever. I through the 70s, you know, all that music and stuff. And I heard the Dead through them and you know, and old Fords and stuff. So I'd say the 70s, you know, but I didn't really start, like, going to see them myself or really got into them. Before that, the 70s, I was more into, you know, Kiss, Queen, you know, that stuff younger when I was younger, even though I still heard the Dead albums from my cousins, you know, and I still got the music. I thought it was good, you know, but I wasn't a real big fan until I got a little older and went and saw them live. In 81 was my first show. That's right. I was 13.
The magic year.
You got all of us beat.
Yeah, yeah. So I went in. Really? Yeah. Well, my first concert ever was 79 Kiss. And, went in to see them, and, you know, that was a big thing for me back then because I was into them heavy, you know. I got out of them when Chris left the band and stuff, and that all started to happen. That's when I was like, all right, you know, whatever. But then I found the Dead. So, you know, when I saw them live for the Dead, that's what hooked me. When I went to see them for the first time, it was great. I had a good time. The people, the energy and all that, you know, was great. But the music, when I saw them perform live, it changed it for me. You know, to see what they did with the stuff they do on their albums, whatever. But when you see them live, they take that same stuff and they stretch it out. And, you know, I was seeing, you know, jazz, blues, gospel, you know, country, rock, so many different things happening on stage at one time. And then to go back the next night and see them again, and everything was different. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't the same stuff. Like, you know, you go see a concert or even, you know, other bands even in the 80s. You saw him in New York, you saw him in Jersey, and then you saw him in Philly. It was the same show every night.
Right, right.
The Dead, you could see the Dead 5 nights in a row, and it was never the same. Yeah. And then if the sixth night did come, you know, they did play another song, but it was a little bit different how they played it than they did 6 nights ago. You know, so that's what hooked me there. It was like, wow, it blew my mind. You know, it was like, wow, this is, you know, entertaining. This is amazing stuff, you know.
Are you watching them right now?
No, actually, I'm recording it now because I knew you guys would be calling. So, but I did watch the first set, you know, and then the second set just started. Just as you guys were just about the call, it came on my phone too and told me they're going live, and I was like, you know. But I'm recording it.
Yeah, it's Pat, Rob. I had a feeling that you would be. I get that little invite from you for that first song every night, and it's a nice little
definitely.
Thing.
But I pay for the Nugs TV, so I watch it at home, and I'll record them if I can't watch them, as you know. But I can go back and watch it later, you know. But I try to catch the opening songs to each show every night, you know.
It seems to me that in the time between now and, let's just say, the whole post-Jerry era,
right,
where the Deadheads, where I'm seeing, as far as not so many people I talk to, but if you go on, like, message boards and just social media, I've never seen the Deadheads as divided as I've seen in the last 3 years going back to Chicago. A lot of people, it was just getting you just bad feedback initially with Trey doing the shows in 2015. What do you make of that? I mean, is that an accurate assessment at this point, man? Or is John getting the reception between what John is getting as opposed to Phil during those five shows?
You're gonna you're gonna get your haters from.
I'm sorry, Trey.
You know, it makes me sad to see what goes on, because I'm on the social media. I'm on a lot of the Dead sites on there, and that's all constantly. And there are these guys that come out and troll, and, you know, the younger Fish guys do, you know, and there's that whole other argument there, you know. It's just, it's not about that for me. It's about the music and everything else, you know. It's sad to see these people. They're missing out on some great music to haters, you know.
Why it is,
I don't know. As far as Trey and John, I think for me, you know, John's a better fit. I won't take nothing away from Trey. I think Trey, by himself with his own band, instead of Fish, he's better. He's a great musician. You know, I will tell you, I was there in California. You know, I saw him with them at the Fairly Well. You know, and I got to see him, and he did it justice. He did great. I take nothing away from the guy. You know, for me, John is just seems to be a better fit for me. You know, he's a great musician. It's sad to see how everybody wants to take this or whatever. See, with the Dead, for me, they've always changed. They're always evolving, and they keep going. And different members have come in over the years. And all right, Jerry's gone. It's not supposed to be the same. It's never gonna be the same. The same when Pig died. As it goes on, you go with it. At least the music's getting played, and it's getting played well, by pure musicians. And I think John playing with these guys, he's changed to himself, and he's playing a lot better. I just see it getting better and better. And for the people that want to knock it for whatever, or the trade, there's a lot of that. There's a lot of younger generations than myself, and then there's been from the years that the Dead haven't been around, and they got hooked onto the Fish and all that, And now that the Dead are back, and all the old Deadheads are coming out, and we're enjoying it, they just want to start. Hey, it's just sad to see. They should enjoy the music,
Fucking
hey, Rob, it's Mark here. I don't know if they let you know that I was sitting here on this panel too, but just a couple things to what you were just saying, man. I'm also a fellow traveler, and first of all, who's got time to hate on anybody, right? Like, the Grateful Dead has always been about enjoying the moment, enjoying the music. So, like, who's got time for that nonsense to be hating about?
Exactly.
But I just wanted to ask you, because this is my personal feeling. Still, my favorite incantation of the Dead since Jerry's passing was Further. That was my personal favorite band. I do like John, but he doesn't pop the music the way, in my opinion, it needs to be popped, right? And I always thought that Further was the best version, so to speak, of the Grateful Dead since Jerry's passing. How do you feel
about that? Listen, everybody has their opinion on whatever. Do I feel Further was fantastic? I didn't catch many shows. I've caught a few. At that time in my life. After Jerry, like I said, I seen him from 81 to 95. I actually was in Chicago. I was living in Chicago at the time in Illinois, and I got to see Jerry's last show, and all that, and whatever. I was, at that point in time, I had four kids, and I stopped touring, and I stopped doing, shows a lot. I was working and taking care of that, so I fell off for a while, And then I got to see some Further shows, and I got to see, other, Rat Dog and Phil Lesh and friends I've seen, and I've seen everything. Yeah, Further for sure was tight, was great, and played well. This is just what it is now. Now that I'm free, my kids are older, and I'm going to be able to go on tour, yeah, I'm enjoying myself. As far as who's this way, right? As far as Trey, like I said, I won't take nothing away from it. As far as comparing each one is different in itself. And yeah, we all wanted to keep going. Like me, and I would love to have, the original stuff that I seen growing up still on stage and going, but it's not possible. So I'm not going to judge other people. That's just me. Yeah, I enjoy this. I enjoy that. Even when Jerry was here and even shows that I've seen, they were bad shows. Jerry didn't have a great day filling this. It was always that, man. It was horrible shows. I've only walked out of two in my whole life because it just bummed me out. But it is what it is.
That's
it's
crazy.
Just music. I'm just there for music. So I don't judge. I don't put labels on that. I don't go there, because that's what everybody wants to do. And I'm just there to enjoy the music, and bring back.
That's what we do. We
label. That's what I'm doing for myself now. I won't compare, all of them because there have been so many different ones,
Especially given the fact that we're losing so many of rock's first and second generations, and it's just almost like every other week.
We just lost another great one, Malcolm.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And
the fact that, why not just enjoy the music in the sense that, again, we are losing these people every almost weekly now. And,
right.
Jerry's not with us, but what? Bob still is. Mickey still is. These guys, enjoy the moment and the fact that these guys are still out there willing to play. They want to play. People want to go. They're putting asses in the seats.
Everybody goes up complaining about the tempo now. I think Bob has a big deal thing with that. These guys are older and everything, and as far as he was speaking about the pop, they're older gentlemen too, so maybe they slowed it down a little bit. I know Bob likes to do that, and they've always changed up tempo, through the years. That was another great thing about going to see them because, they played this, and like I said, and they changed it the next time you see them. That set list is all slowed down or sped up or, and that's it. You always saw something different, and and enjoy the music is how I feel now. And it's out there and it's still there. Like you were saying, like it is, you know, we're losing these great people. So go out and forget about comparing or whatever, and just enjoy what's out there for us to hear live from real musicians. And that's how I feel.
Regarding the different eras of the band, man, different, you know, flavors, so to speak, man, do you have any particular era of the group that you are, you know, favorable to?
Well, you know, everybody has their years that they were great. You know, I mean, as far as me, my touring years, 84 was great for me. I thought it was a good year. 88, I had a blast, you know, Oxford, Maine and all that. I mean, that was a hell of a summer, man. I mean, that year, we had good times there. You know, as far as recordings and stuff that I didn't see live that I hear and I can go back now, it's because, you know, and listen to, you know, of course, it was, you know, it's always standout. 77 was a great year. 72 was a great year, you know, some of the stuff that I listened to, you know, it's,
being in New Jersey, know. Man, having grown up in New Jersey, man, do you know anybody personally that was at English Town?
My cousins, yeah, and a couple other people that grew up in Forge, you know, that were older, in the 70s, yeah, a lot of people went down there, you know.
Is that Roosevelt Stadium?
Show was, you know, was like crazy. That's what I compare my Oxford to, is that, because, you know, Oxford, we had 96,000 people or whatever it was up in Oxford, Maine, you know, Speedway up in the middle of the woods for 3 days with Little Feet, you know, and it was me and Sean were right in the front of the stage. That was my only ever like closeness to Jerry Garcia ever. And we were right in front of him. And it's, you know, if Sean Salz was with me now, we swear he looked over at us. He was smiling. Yeah, it was good old time, man. And he looked right at us and he was like nodding at us, like, you know. But I was sober that day, so, you know.
That English Town 77 show is still my favorite Not Fade Away ever. Just
oh, unbelievable. And the Peggy O was incredible, you know.
I concur.
Good eyes, too.
Yeah, well, yes. Without a doubt. That English Town show is some of the best recorded. Mississippi Half Step was, forget it. I listen to that. That's the one I pick out on YouTube all the time. When I got it on my phone, I'm at work or something, I want to listen to something. That's the show I pull up and listen to songs off of there. It was an incredible show, that English Town show, and I wish I would get it. I wasn't quite old enough. Like I said, 81 was my first show. I was 13. Yeah, 13. And touring was fun. You know, we did it hard. You know, I didn't really, like I said, 84 was my first breakout summer where I finally decided that's it. I'm going on the road. I'm going to do the whole East Coast, you know, and stuff like that. You know, Providence and, you know, Hartford and Greensboro, North Carolina. I mean, all different places we went to, you know. That's when I started getting heavy into it, and, you know, 84, and then 88 was a good year, you know, 89 and all that, and then it started changing, you know, the crowd started changing, we had some bad things starting to happen, some bad vibes going through and stuff, you know, and then the crowd kind of changed, and the younger guys were crashing the gate there. It was at Deer Creek, I think it was, or wherever it was in 92, I think that was, you know, things started getting a little crazy, so, and then I started getting older, and you know, like I said, I started having kids and stuff, so I had to slow down a little bit. But I did get to, like I said, get to catch the Chicago show. And that show there, even him on stage, you could see it, how tired he looked. And he just sang so many roads there. I mean, you could see it. Like, it's so soulful. Like, he knew, you know, like, he was tired. I think he just wanted to leave it all behind for a while. You know, you understand at that point, it's 30 years of straight touring without taking a break. You know what I mean? I mean, what band really does that? I mean, in the 70s, they took a slight hiatus. I forget what year it was, for not many months, but for 30 years, they chucked it out, man. You know, every year, two tours a year at least, you know, if not more. And that's why I call them America's band, you know?
Absolutely, man.
The band has went for 30 years, you know, and I enjoy the music live. You know, their stuff is, seeing them, like I said, that's the whole thing. That's what caught me. I've seen everybody, you know. Heavy metal to, you know, Simon and Garfunkel to whatever. I took my parents to see shows with me and stuff, you know, and I've seen everybody in concert, you know. I love music. I come from music. My family are into music. My father, you know, in his 60s going through, you know, Hitchhiking Across America and all that, you know, and Haight-Ashbury and all that, you know, and before that, my grandparents and all that, with the old, you know, the old era music and all that big band stuff and jazz and stuff. So, you know, and that's what attracted me to it. You know, it was everything we were seeing. You see so much stuff with the Dead, country, blues, jazz, reggae, you know, rock. I mean, all melted into one, you know, and you didn't know where you would get any night that you went. So you can go five, six nights in a row and it's like, not see the same song. I mean, they've been chucking for 30 years, you know. Now it's 50. Now they're back and they're feeling it, you know. And then it's another thing. People talk about money grab. Well, that, these guys deserve it if any band does, you know. For all the years they let us free taping. You know, what other band used to let you tape for free, you know? I mean,
true. It was good point. No one made that point tonight.
The whole scene was great for me, you know.
And given that, you know, as far as like ticket prices and all the bullshit, man, that people are bitching about, it really is in the 21st century the only real source of, as far as like the revenue streams of music, you know, they come from, you know, album sales, which nobody sells albums anymore, let's face it. So, you know, merchandising, you know, but, you know, how much money can you make on T-shirt sales? And it really comes down to, and you know, it's either licensing or touring. So, and it's not just exclusive to the Dead, man. It's every fucking band out there that goes back to the 60s or 70s or, you know, even the 80s at this point. Because, you know, anybody in the that's come out after the 90s, man, they're not going to tour on that level. And they just don't have the same, you know, opportunities as far as generating any sort of revenue or making any sort of decent living as a musician in the 21st century. If you've come out in the last 10 years, you know, you're really not going to, chances are you're most likely not going to get out of the club scene unless you get on a festival or something like that. So it is what it is.
It's sad, but it is what it is. You know, what are you going to do? And, you know, and I tell people, I say, you know, I did the hard touring and sleeping in the mud and tents in the back of trucks and, you know, leaving tents on fields, and, you know, whatever, you know. I did that for years, you know, and now that I'm at a point in my life where I can afford to go see this and relax when I do it, you know, and have a good time for myself. You know, this is my vacation. This is, you know, people go on vacation or people go to Vegas and spend money or go here. I go see shows, you know, and enjoy myself. And I, you know, I'm going to be 50 this year. And like I said, it is, my kids are raised. They did my thing. Well, now I can go, you know, back to my youth a little bit before it's all gone and see these guys, you know. And I'm not just seeing them. I'm going to other stuff. You know, I live close to a Hard Rock and they're always got, you know, bands here, you know, whoever, you know, if I get tickets, I go see them, check them out, you know, and enjoy what's left of whoever it is, you know, and rock and roll is, you know, to me, it ain't dead, man. It's just, it's around. You just got to find it. You got to look for it, you know?
Dig it. I guess you said just to wrap up, going back to 81 and your first show and just all those elements that that just lured you to the Dead. We narrowed it down to spontaneity, man. If you could, like, pinpoint one or two elements that makes the Dead different than the rest of the rock and roll world, man. Why it was different for the fans, the entire experience, man. If somebody came out of the future and said, you know, looking back on the 20th century and said, well, what was this thing called the Grateful Dead, man? If you had to narrow it down, man, what would you tell that person?
Good question, Mike.
Wow, you know, it's tough to narrow down.
It's a long-winded question.
Whatever, but key point-wise, for me, my experience, it was the music, what I was seeing happening on stage, the people around me, you know, the good vibes I was getting, the freeness I felt at them kind of shows that I didn't feel at other shows, you know.
It was really about the moment.
It was about the moment, but it was communal in the moment. You know what I mean? Like, the band played off of us, and we played off the band.
People,
man,
with you doing the same thing,
exactly,
you know, enjoying and being one, and you know, and just enjoying what was going on around you. You know, it wasn't
a lot of good acid too.
You could be free. Nobody judged you. There was no judge going on. You could do whatever you wanted to
do.
You could express yourself any way you wanted to do.
Jesus,
you know,
Christ.
And people were all around you to help you and everything else. It was different than other shows, other cups.
Long, but strange trip indeed,
the
man.
Music was fantastic. You know, and it was different every show, every night, tempo-wise, list-wise, song-wise, I mean, everything, you know?
Big sense of, as far as community, spontaneity, man, that's what it's all about, the moment, and just creating something together.
Exactly.
Dig it, man. As far as I mean, we're all on the same page. I just, like I said, this was an awesome thing that I, you know, we finally got to do, because I've been wanting to do this ever since the beginning of the podcast. Like the beginning of the show, we said, like, you know, we're going to talk rock and roll. We're going to talk, you know, we have 7 decades to talk about and different subjects. But I wanted to focus. I wanted to do episodes that were exclusive to one band, exclusive to one artist. And there's only a handful that deserve that. You know, the Beatles.
Agreed.
And, you know, and the Dead were certainly one of those shows that we had to do. And, you know, we've been talking for you and me have been talking like over a year about doing this. So I'm glad that we were finally able to put this together and get you on the line. I was hoping, you know, it's a bummer that we didn't get to do this in person. But you know what? That'll happen at some point, man. When you're in town, you know, we get together and put you in front of the mic, whatever the topic may be.
Sounds good,
and
man.
By the way, for man, sure. I saw brother Sean a couple weeks ago. He was in town for the weekend, and we spent about 3 hours together just kicking back with just talking about music and shows and stuff. Anyway, Rob, it was great hearing from you, man, and we'll be in touch.
I'll talk to you soon, Mike. You know, thank you. It's an honor to be here, man. You know, enjoy, and everybody be well, and take care. Peace, love, and Zen, man.
Awesome, brother.
Thanks, Rob. Good job, bro.
All right, take care, all right? Be well, guys. Right,
okay, care. Man.
Really, really quick before we shut down, though, I just want to say that, like, a fun fact that people may not know about going to a Grateful Dead concert, right?
Uh-huh.
Is that it didn't matter what your ticket said. You went and you found a seat and you sat somewhere.
True.
And no one kicked you out of it.
True. It's another
thing.
For
the most part, unless you were trying to get to the first 10 rows or something.
Right.
But like, you know.
They want their seat.
Yeah, people just want to like, you know, people just hung out and sit and there was like no fuss.
Right.
And like, I've been to a million shows at Madison Square Garden. And when the Grateful Dead was in town, there was no security inside of Madison Square Garden, right? And when you went to other bands there, they would be like kicking you out for like smoking a J or something or whatever. But when the Grateful Dead was there, no one seemed to care.
Did you ever have gigs though where you felt the security was a pain in the balls though, and they were
at
cracking
some
down
venues? Yes, yeah. At some venues, absolutely.
I think some things are just a lost cause, man. And security just knows we ain't even gonna fucking we ain't even gonna try.
And the Dead played Madison Square Garden 6 to 9 times a year. Right, yeah. So they were used to us, and they knew that, like, you know, just leave us alone.
Yeah, nobody's going to die. Nobody's going to get shot.
Everybody's going to be cool, and it's going to be what it's going to be, you know?
Do we have any Dead-related gun to the heads, man, or should we even go there?
I can't tell you what my favorite Dead song is, man. I was going to say, I hope you don't ask me, because I have no effing idea.
I know exactly what my
favorite Dead song
is.
What is your favorite Dead song?
The one I'm currently seeing live.
What is that?
Whatever song.
Oh, I got you. I got
you. All
right, good answer, man. Good answer.
See how it is?
Stella Blue, Terrapin.
Narrow it down to a couple.
Earlier, we were talking about, like, you know, I definitely have some favorite segues. Terrapin's like the segue between China Cat Sunflower and I Know You Rider, and the segue from Scarlet Pagonias into Fire in the Mountain, or like a play in Uncle John's. Like, those in between jams are some of the best moments I've had at concerts. They're not songs. They're
about shows.
Like,
yeah.
The musical
so many
conjunctions.
People were into it. Everybody danced, and there are so many shows now, you got to sit. You can't. I don't know. It just seems like everybody was into it, you know?
You don't have... So you can't pick one, man. You can't pick two or
three. I was thinking of it today, dude. What's my favorite Dead song? I was like, man, like... It's tough, man. I don't know. There's not one song that really jumps out. I'm sorry, man. Got nothing.
I would go with Unbroken Chain, Terrapin Station, and...
You got a gun to your head, Mike. One.
One, all right. Unbroken Chain, man. Like, if it's fucking gun to the head, it's Unbroken Chain.
There you go.
Interesting.
But like I said, mutter off fucking two or three. That's what I did. If it's gun to the head, then it's Unbroken Chain.
That's the thing. It changes every day.
Or China Doll.
Terrapin is very special to me for reasons
I don't know, man.
That I probably shouldn't get into.
Dire Wolf.
Gun to my head, it might be Sing Me Back Home, but that's just me.
Easy
that's
win. Dire Wolf.
That all day long.
That's not even a Grateful Dead original, either.
It's not, but, you know, hey.
Well, hey, man, I just hope, what are the kids going to do when the Grateful Dead and experiences like it are gone? You know, who's going to uphold those kind of values, man, of community, free love, understanding, clean air, clean water, communication, just being chill.
Well, living in the world we're living in today, man, I think we've been cut off from all of that shit already, you know. All those good things, man, that we, you know, that the counterculture turned out to be right about, and we haven't been farther from that, man, in the post-countercultural era, man.
Not in 2017. Sure don't feel like it.
And as far as a communal thing, man, and rock and roll being what rock and roll is today, man, it's a scary thought.
It is definitely under fire.
Yeah.
It, you know, and that's why we hold rock under fire every fucking time we get together.
Because we need it.
You know, yeah, it's there, but it's not there.
Got to get out those. What are those things they use to zap you back to life to put them on your heart?
defibrillator.
We need a defibrillator.
All right, man. Well, guys, the Deadhead's with us, man. Deadhead's on race. Well, you've taken over Pat's spot. So
Tom Mahalchik took
over. We're with Tom and Mark and Stickman and Rock Under Fire. Find us on iTunes. Well, if you've made it to this part of the show, man, more power to you. You're a better man than me.
And I want
we're surrounded by deadheads.
Let's thank Rob man. Rob was very cool, very zen. I want to thank that dude for showing up on the show.
Thanks to Rob for joining us. Awesome very insight, man. We could not have done this show without you guys. And coming from us as just rock and roll fans, not deadheads, we needed the insight of the deadheads. So again, thanks to all who participated in the festivities. This is Rock Under Fire, rockunderfire.com, Rock Under Fire on iTunes, Rock Under Fire on YouTube. Look for us, subscribe, download, spread the word. Peace.
We'll now have a seance to bring Jerry back to life.
There we go.